Women Aloud, an exploration of women in the here and now. Welcome to Women Aloud. I'm your host, Sean Marie Bryan. This edition of Women Aloud marks our re-entry with an April recap and a slightly revised format. As we have always believed, in order to reinvent the future, we must honor and learn from the past. We'll continue to start each show by noting milestones by and for women in What Came Before. Women Aloud will follow with State Slate, wherein we discuss and share news from around the world that may not have made it across the mainstream press. Rounding out Women Aloud's standard lineup will be Let Her Shine, where we shine the hot light spotlight on an inspiring, deserving woman. At times, we like to include a guest. When this happens, that segment will follow the standard lineup I have just shared. I have missed our Women Aloud discussions, so let's get right back to it with What Came Before. Way back on April 7th in 1805, Sacajawea, or as most of the nation pronounces her name, Sacajawea, begins helping the Lewis and Clark expedition as an interpreter. April 5th, 1911, 100,000 to 500,000 people march in New York City to attend the funeral of seven unidentified victims of the Triangle Shirtwaist Company fire in late March. April 2nd, 1931, 17-year-old Jackie Mitchell, the second woman to play baseball in the all-minor leagues, pitches an exhibition game against the New York Yankees and strikes out both Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig. The next day, the baseball commissioner voided her contract, claiming baseball was too strenuous for women. The ban was not overturned until 1992. April 13, 1933, Ruth Bryan Owen is the first woman to represent the U.S. as a foreign minister when she is appointed as envoy to Denmark. April 19, 1977, 15 women in the House of Representatives form the Congressional Caucus for Women's Issues. April 7, 1987, opening of the National Museum of Women in the Arts in Washington, D.C., the first museum devoted to women artists. April 28, 1993, marks the first Take Our Daughters to Work Day, sponsored by the Ms. Foundation. In 2003, it became Take Our Daughters and Sons to Work Day. And way back in 1777, on April 26, at approximately 9 p.m., 16-year-old Sybil Ludington became a hero of the American Revolutionary War. Sybil, the eldest daughter of Colonel Henry Ludington, climbed onto her horse and proceeded to ride 40 miles in order to muster local militia troops in response to a British attack on the town of Danbury, Connecticut, covering twice the distance that Paul Revere rode during his famous midnight ride. Riding all night through rain, Sybil returned home at dawn, having given nearly the whole regiment of 400 colonial troops the order to assemble. When the regiment could not save Danbury from being burned, they joined forces with the Continental Army following the subsequent Battle of Ridgefield and were able to stop the British advance and force their return to their boats. Following the battle, General George Washington personally thanked Sybil for her service and bravery. Although every American school child knows the story of Paul Revere, unfortunately, few are taught about Sybil Ludington's courageous feat and her contribution to the war effort. Sadly, we must bid farewell with gratitude to a few trailblazing women. Mary Doyle Keefe, the model for Norman Rockwell's iconic 1943 Rosie the Riveter painting that symbolized the millions of American women who went to work on the home front during World War II, has died. She was 92. Keefe, who never riveted herself, was paid $5 for each of two mornings she posed for Rockwell. 24 years after she posed, Rockwell sent her a letter calling her the most beautiful woman he'd ever seen and apologizing for the hefty body in the painting. "I did have to make you into sort of a giant," he wrote. The Rosie painting, not to be confused with a poster by Pittsburgh artist depicting a woman flexing her arm under the words, "We can do it," would later be used in a nationwide effort to sell war bonds. Longtime New York City-based feminist and lesbian activist Sydney Abbott was found dead after a fire in her home in South Hold, Suffolk County. She was 78. Abbott, co-author of the book Sappho Was a Right-On Woman, was a force for gay women's rights in New York and beyond since the 70s, when she helped urge now not to ignore lesbian issues. There were disagreements among the gay and straight members in those early days. Famously, Betty Friedan warned about a lavender menace from the lesbian activists in their movement's midst. But Abbott was always a mender of rifts within the larger feminist movement. She held no grudges and was truly a loving human being, Jacqueline Michaud Cabellis said. There was no anger whatsoever. It was very, very important to her to make sure we knew that there's no big difference between us. Veteran Feminists of America president Eleanor Pam states, Sidney Abbott's contribution to modern feminism cannot be overstated. She was a brilliant, fearless trailblazer, an authentic pioneer in the women revolution and its struggle for equal rights. Also, a musical happening occurred recently that you may not have been privy to. Women Aloud's house band and my dear friends, Dear Marsha, celebrated 20 years of making music together. Congratulations, Wendy Clay and Raina Ayers, for making it such a wonderful milestone and for giving the world great music to listen to. Here is one of Dear Marsha's masterpieces. Women Aloud will be right back with State Slate.
Okay, y'all ready?
Yeah.
I'll cue you in.
Came along and you saved my soul.
are listening to Women Aloud. I'm your host, Sean Marie Bryan. If you have any questions or want to reach out to us, head on over to our Facebook page and give us a like, or visit our show page at networklisten.com. You can also send us an email to words@networklisten.com. April was a busy month for women making news. Here is your state slate. Loretta Lynch was confirmed as U.S. Attorney General after months of GOP delays, making history by becoming the first African-American woman to hold the post. Lynch was confirmed in the Senate 56-43. All Democrats voted for her, along with 10 Republicans. Senator Ted Cruz, Republican from Texas, one of Lynch's loudest critics, was the only senator to miss the vote. Hours earlier, he railed against Lynch for being unfit for the job. The Senate finally confirmed Loretta Lynch to be America's next Attorney General, and America will be better off for it, President Barack Obama said in a statement. Loretta's confirmation ensures that we are better positioned to keep our communities safe, keep our nation secure, and ensure that every American experiences justice under the law. The Supreme Court listened to arguments for same-sex marriage with Mary Bonatto at the helm. As the lawyer for seven gay and lesbian couples in 2003, she persuaded Massachusetts' highest court to make the state the first in the nation to allow same-sex couples to wed. Now, 37 states recognize gay marriage, and polls show nearly 2 out of 3 Americans support the right of gay and lesbian couples to marry. On April 28th, Bonatto led what might be the final fight in the battle she began in Massachusetts a dozen years ago. When she delivered oral arguments before the U.S. Supreme Court in a highly charged case that could make gay marriage legal in all 50 states, she will tackle the core issue before the court, whether state bans on same-sex marriage violate the U.S. Constitution's guarantee of equal protection under the law. It was her first time arguing before the nation's high court. In addition to winning the landmark Massachusetts case, she was part of the legal team that made Vermont the first state to legalize civil unions in 1999 and helped win the first federal court rulings against the Defense of Marriage Act in 2010 and 2012 before the Supreme Court struck down the law in 2013. Mary Bonatto closed her argument beautifully when the court had said that the question is who decides whether same-sex marriage will be lawful, the courts or the states. She responded that the choice is not between the court and the state, but instead whether the individual can decide who to marry or whether the government will decide for him. Well done, Mary Bonatto, and hopefully it will the settlement or the agreement will come sooner than the scheduled end of June, as they have stated. And I would like to point out that it's just marriage. There's no such thing as gay marriage or straight marriage or same-sex marriage. It's marriage. And the GLBTQQIAA community simply wants to have the same right as all of their other fellow citizens and taxpayers. So, what happens when a small Missouri town elects its first black female mayor? Well, most of the police force and several officials resign, citing safety concerns. Tyrus Byrd, a former city clerk, was officially sworn in as mayor on Tuesday after beating incumbent Randall Ramsey. Ramsey had served as mayor of Parma for 37 years under 2 terms. Some Parma residents say they aren't worried about safety now that the police force has shrunk. "I think it's pretty dirty they all quit without giving her a chance," said resident Marsha Miller. "But I don't think they hurt the town any by quitting, because who needs 6 police for 740 people? At her swearing-in ceremony, Byrd said that she is looking to getting things in order for the city. "We here at Women Aloud wish Tyrus Byrd and the people of Parma, Mississippi, all the best." At the Paris Marathon, Siabatu Sané of Gambia stood out from the other racers. In addition to her race number, she wore traditional Gambian garb and carried 45 pounds of water on her head. Sané, who had never left her home country before, participated in the marathon as part of an effort to raise awareness of the difficulties African women face in accessing clean water. While she walked the race, she also wore a sign that read, "In Africa, women travel this distance every day to get potable water. Help us shorten the distance." Sinead, a mother of four, lives in a small village of 300 people and started carrying water when she was 5 years old. Now, she and two of her daughters, 12-year-old Naima and 20-year-old Marmina, carry water together. I wake up in the morning and go collect water from a well. I have to walk 8 kilometers, 5 miles, there and back. I do this 3 times a day, at least. Each woman carries over 40 pounds of water on the return trip, wearing flip-flops and often walking in extreme heat. Sinead was walking on behalf of Water for Africa, a charitable organization that's working to draw attention for the need for bore-dug wells with water pumps rather than hand-dug wells that are common there. In Sinead's home country, Water for Africa estimates 200 to 300 water pumps would supply the needs of the whole population. An urgent need, since 40 to 60% of the current wells and pumping systems are deteriorating. Sinead says, "I want them to help us dig boreholes, a sustainable water source. But not only more holes, I want more sustainable ones too. That's all we need." To learn more or to help, visit waterforafrica.org.uk. This from Women You Should Know. Promoting the presence, awareness, and progress of women in traditionally male-dominated fields, childhood friends Jessica Gordon-Roth and Margot Valley have launched the grassroots campaign, This Is What We Look Like. The goal is to change the way people think about women in work, while also raising funds to support committees and groups working for women in each of these traditionally male-dominated fields along the way. The women reached out to friends in their respective fields, encouraging them to purchase a This Is What a Philosopher Looks Like, or a This Is What an Anesthesiologist Looks Like t-shirt, to show the world what philosophers and anesthesiologists can and do look like. The duo then posted photos of their friends and colleagues in their shirts to a Tumblr page. Jessica and Margot made the campaign official, launching more shirts in a variety of fields, including but not limited to CEO, veteran, law, technology, sculptor, drummer, classics, and engineering, with plans to add more soon. From Color Lines by Kima Safir. Once, 7-year-old Natalie McGriff began having self-esteem issues around reading as well as the texture of her hair. Her mother, Angie Nixon from Jacksonville, Florida, decided to do something about it. The mother and daughter pair created The Adventures of Moxie Girl, a comic book about a little girl who becomes a superhero through powers acquired from a magical shampoo she used on her multicolored afro puffs. With her puffs, Moxie Girl is able to stop book-eating monsters from destroying the Jacksonville Public Library. McGriff presented her comic book at OneSpark, a popular crowdfunding festival, and was awarded a check for $16,423.69 for its publication, beating out more than 530 entries. According to the Moxie Girl Instagram, the official comic is due out in June. From Jess Kibler at Bitch Magazine. In many video games, the bad guys are villains, hell-bent on global domination, or zombies hungry for human flesh. In game designer and programmer Nina Freeman's new video game, Freshman Year, the antagonist is much more realistic, a guy who tries to sexually assault a college girl. It's a quick online game. It only takes 10 minutes to play it the entire way through, where you play as a college freshman, Nina. You begin the game curled up in bed, scrolling through Facebook pictures from the previous weekend's wild party. But when your friend Jenna texts you and asks you to come out that night, your decisions begin to change your course like a choose-your-own-adventure novel. You can either ask to walk over with Jenna, or you can say you're being lazy and we'll meet her at the bar later. You can decide whether to go in the jeans you're wearing or to dress up in a short, tight skirt. But no matter what decisions you make, the result is always the same. You end up being cornered and sexually assaulted by the bar's bouncer to a sparse soundtrack of only your own pounding heartbeat. Freshman Year shows that your own decisions aren't what dictate whether or not you can get sexually harassed or assaulted. You can dress as modestly as possible. You can have only 1 or 2 or 0 drinks, and that still doesn't make you immune to being harassed. The only decision that leads to sexual assault is the assaulter's decision to assault, and that's an important lesson for the world to learn. I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, wouldn't it be great if every, I don't know, at freshman initiation or orientation, that every male play this game. Ah, I think that would be amazing. Well done. We will keep our eyes on her for sure. In entertainment news, Vincent Schilling reported in Indian Country on today's media network that a dozen actors walked off the set of a new Adam Sandler movie being filmed for Netflix. The film is called The Ridiculous Six and is said to be a spoof of The Magnificent Seven. However, many took offense to how the film depicts Native Americans and disrespects Native women and elders. Actor and tribal member of Navajo Nation, Lauren Anthony, said, "One thing that really offended a lot of people was that there was a female character called Beaver's Breath. One character says, 'Hey, Beaver's Breath,' and the Native woman says, 'How did you know my name?'" Other examples of disrespect included another Native woman's name as No Bra, an actress portraying an Apache woman squatting and urinating while smoking a peace pipe, and feathers inappropriately positioned on a teepee. "We talked to the producers about our concerns. They just told us, 'If you guys are so sensitive, you should leave.' I was just standing there and got emotional and teary-eyed. I didn't want to cry, but the feeling just came over me. This is supposed to be a comedy that makes you laugh. A film like this should not make someone feel this way." "Nothing has changed," said Allison Young, a Navajo and Dartmouth student. "We are still just Hollywood Indians." Isabel Hellier of iDevice.com reports, Australian actress Rose Byrne has teamed up with writer and actress Cray Boylan, director Gracie Otto, producer Jessica Carrera, and director Shannon Murphy to form a production company called The Dollhouse Collective. Speaking on the collective's inception, the women explained, "The idea has been germinating for a while. We are close friends and we have worked together, so it's been a natural progression. By and large, the film industry remains a boys' club, with five men employed for every one woman in cinema. The Dollhouse Collective already has three productions in development, each one spearheaded by women. This and similar endeavors are essential steps in changing the shape of filmmaking." Meryl Streep has funded a writer's workshop for screenwriters over 40 in partnership with New York Women in Film and Television, which will pair eight women with successful, experienced counterparts who can advise them on bringing their scripts to production. The Writers' Lab will take place September 18th to 20th at Wiawaka Center for Women on Lake George, New York. They're seeking submissions from all racial, ethnic, socioeconomic, and cultural groups, as well as a broad selection of screenplays across all genres. They start taking applications May 1st. Visit nywift.org for more information. In the meantime, if you are a woman in the entertainment industry looking for a way to cope with the rampant boys club, head on over to shitpeoplesaytowomendirectors.tumblr.com. You can submit your story and read some gems of what others have gone through, such as, "No one will ever want to work with you. You're too bossy. You should learn to be nicer." Or, "You're a terrible assistant. Why don't you go back to working in porn where you belong?" How about, "She's good, but I only want to hire someone I can have beers with at the end of the day." "You can't get in this van, honey. I'm waiting for the director." "You should really wear a jacket because people find your breasts distracting." "A producer once told me in an interview that he wasn't going to hire me because he had already hired a woman once before." And of course, "So, you slept with the executive producer, right?" This year will mark a celebration and the end of an era. Whether you were a supporter or a detractor, you cannot deny that the Michigan Women's Music Festival has been an institution in this country and a haven for those that sought it as a safe and rejuvenating space for women. It was the subject of much controversy over the admission or not of trans women. As I have not attended the festival myself, I decided to read a letter from its co-founder and producer, Lisa Vogel, followed by a response from Lynn Breedlove. "Dear Sisters Amazons Festival family, it has been my honor and privilege to produce the Michigan Women's Music Festival for 40 years. It has been my life's work, my deepest commitment, my constant challenge, and my most profound joy. Every single thing of value I have learned in the world, I have learned in the process of being part of building this beloved community. Almost every friend and family member who I cherish, I have met on that hallowed ground, and every single way I have learned to put my mind, heart, shoulder into the purpose of creating something beautiful that honors women has come from the sweat I earned on that land. I'm writing to tell you that the 40th Festival will be the last Michigan Women's Music Festival. The spirit of this community will live on forever. The friends and family we have found on the land are eternal. Everything we have created together will feed the inspiration for what comes next. It's possible that I will come back with something else, or that other sisters will take the inspiration of the Michigan community and create the next expression of our Amazon culture. What is true for me is that now is the time to bring this 40-year cycle to a close, stepping out on joy at our most incredible anniversary celebration. We have known in our hearts for some years that the life cycle of the festival was coming to a time of closure. Too often in our culture, change is met only with fear. The true cycle of life is denied to avoid the grief of loss, but change is the ultimate truth of life. Sisters, I ask you to remember that our 40-year festival has outlived nearly all of her kin. She has served us well. I want us all to have the opportunity to experience the incredible full life cycle of our beloved festival, consciously, with time to celebrate, and yes, time to grieve. There have been struggles, there's no doubt about it. This is part of our truth, but it is not, and never has been, our defining story. The festival has been the crucible for nearly every critical cultural and political issue the lesbian feminist community has grappled with for four decades. Those struggles have been a beautiful part of our collective strength. They have never been a weakness. For many of us, this one week in the woods is the all-too-rare place and time where we experience validation for our female bodies and where the female experience proceeds at the center of our community focus. A place to lay our burden down from the misogyny that pervades our lives from cradle to grave. A place to live in intergenerational community and to live in harmony with Mother Earth. I know this is true for me. And I have a deep trust that each and every one of us can take what we have experienced on that land and continue to create space that feeds our spirit, creates diverse community, honors our experience, and supports our struggle as women making our way through the patriarchal world. Please take what you love about Michigan and use it to create something new and beautiful. It is important that each and every one of us knows she is empowered to build on what we have experienced together on the land. Everything you feel on the land, everything you see is something of spirit and love and passion for female empowerment, for women's community. The festival's 40 years of culture and community are a powerful seed, and our communal experiences have created fertile ground to plant in. I know that we will find inspiration and vision to create our next time and space. For those of us who will be gathering for our 40th anniversary this August, let's joyously hold up our incredible community and allow ourselves to be strong enough to consciously let go of this incarnation of her. With all the love we each hold in our beautiful hearts, let us gather this August knowing that we truly cherish about the festival lives on in each of us, and more will come from this fertile ground. Let's do this up together, Amazon proud. I will meet you there in August, my eyes meeting yours, heart wide open. With all of my love and respect, Lisa. And this from Lynn Breedlove. I've spent a decade never publicly mentioning Michigan since Tribe 8 last played there in 2005, the last time I went. Topic too hot, stakes too high. Tired of being accused of hate and ignorance while trying to facilitate communication between two groups I considered each other's potential allies and to change things from inside or outside, depending on where you stood. I got love, I got hate, from both sides. Peacemaker is a fucked up job. I got sick of trying to edit my own Wikipedia page because someone who wasn't as fortunate as I was to have any other outlet for their upset and fear was more invested in rewriting it than I was in maintaining some kind of image. I gave up caring what other people thought. I spent some time in despair. I put my attention on my immediate family and serving my community where I was welcome. As a political artist, I don't have the option of going away, shutting up, or making rom-coms. I ended up with some respect for myself and others. I'm proud of the progress that has been made, and I believe we will be done growing when we're extinct. What I learned was, 1. If you're told you're doing it wrong, it means you're doing something. 2. If you're scared, take a breath. Courage, love, and grief all reside in the chest cavity. If you're hurt, ask the other person about their feelings. Listen. Flexibility cures fanaticism. I statements. Take breaks. Shit will get worked out without your help. If you don't feel understood, study. Prepare for criticism. Own your shit. Get therapy. Examine your privilege. Honor roots, look for connections, be willing to change, and maintain integrity. Compassion will out. You are listening to Women Aloud. Let Her Shine is next.
And you never know what to do.
This is Women Aloud. I'm your host, Sean Marie Bryan. Why not give us a like or follow along over on Facebook? If you'd like to learn more about us, you may check out our show page at networklisten.com. You can email us as well to words@networklisten.com. And just what is our favorite letter on Women Aloud? That's right, shine! We are shining the hot light spotlight on one Jada Pinkett Smith. Now, normally when we let her shine, we give you a biography of sorts of the woman we have put in the spotlight. As there is a ton of information out there for Jada Pinkett Smith, this time around we're going to spotlight one of her, believe it or not, Facebook status updates. One, she herself titled, Race versus Gender. Hillary Clinton is running for president. When Hillary made her announcement, I was more confused and anxious than excited. Her announcement conjured many old hurts and scars. In the past, I may have been criticized for suggesting that black women extend our media platforms to white women in the way in which white women are making strides to extend their media platforms to us. But Hillary's announcement reminded me that the relationship between black and white women on the political platform has been deeply complicated, disappointing, and painful. The only question I have been asking myself is if I'm supposed to vote for Hillary because she's a woman. Will she take us to the mountaintop with her, or will women of color once again be left out and left behind? For example, during the women's suffrage movement, black women were specifically excluded because northern white women feared of losing support of southern white women if black women were included. What made it even more offensive is that two women given the credit of pioneering the women's movement were at first abolitionists. Those were complicated times, but as time has gone on, it seems as if that sentiment of separatism did not let up and permeated through the feminist movement as a place to facilitate and empower white women only. I personally suffered the racism and classism of the feminist movement, and now have had to watch my daughter battle even ageism as she journeys to participate in the feminist movement. But she continues to fight the good fight, referring to herself as a feminist while her mother refers to herself as a womanist who supports feminism and feminists. You can imagine that Willow and I have had some spirited conversations about this topic. That's uneasy for even a mother and daughter to talk about at times, which simply illuminates how volatile a subject it could be for a nation of women to explore. But we must. How will we reconcile the past to move into the future? Can Hillary, whether she becomes president or not, heal the broken political ties of the women of this nation? I know it takes far more than the idea of being the first female president of the United States to run this country, but as a woman, it sure is an exciting idea. Women of color and white women have been taking on the majority of their fights on the political platform on separate lines. Can Hillary Clinton change that legacy through her journey to become president? Because if she can, she would not only have my vote, but she would have my heart. To all my women friends of colors and creeds, this is a great opportunity for healing and reconciliation. Let's woman up in the spirit of compassion to gain more understanding of one another and the issues we face. Let's get the conversation started. Jay. Thank you, Jada Pinkett Smith, for all you have done, for all you represent, for putting yourself out there. Recently, Ms. Magazine had an article about including boomer moms in the feminist discussion, how they did feminism and how the younger generation are doing feminism, bridging gaps across feminism, whether it be age, class, race, privilege, is an important aspect to the bigger picture, and I'm not sure if anyone could have stated the why and how we need these bridges better than Jada Pinkett Smith did on Facebook. We applaud you, and we stand with you. Yes! Let's get the conversation started. I'm Sean Marie Bryan, and this has been Women Aloud. You have just listened to Women Aloud, a production through Network Listen.